This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 81. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, a podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's the word this week, Mike?
I am reorganizing a billion things.
Yeah?
Mostly my to-do lists and how I'm kind of managing things and how I'm assigning myself tasks and things like that. I started playing around with Trello from Fog Creek a little bit.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about it. I've even heard it in like some non-techie podcasts and such, people talking about they're using it. And when they say it, I'm like, hey, wait a minute, that's for us nerds, right? Like normal people aren't supposed to use that kind of stuff. Some people are saying it's pretty cool for like task management or to-do list management, or how does it work?
Yeah, it's really good for list management of any kind. I mean, if you have like an organization that wants to manage a set of tasks or you have a project going on, you can do... I don't want to say everything that you can do in something like Basecamp, because there's obviously things that you can't do, but I think that it would be really good as either a supplement or, you know, a complement for Basecamp or possibly even a replacement. I'm not sure. I haven't really taken it to that extreme yet. You know, you can create these little card, basically a virtual card, and you can move the cards around on the screen and you create all these different lists. You can put in voting. So if you have something that you're working on, and this kind of goes into like Kanban, where you put things, if you have like a case for a new feature or something like that, you can have people voting on them, and you can make some of these things public, some of them private, et cetera. And then you can create organizations where, you know, you have your organization and then you can invite outside people to view the things that you're working on. It's really cool, but it's very much a horizontal application, not so much a vertical application. Like Fogbugs is vertical, and this can be used, you know, as you said, not just by nerds, but by pretty much anyone.
Right. And when it first came out, you know, it was on Hacker News, 8 months ago, like the day it launched.
Right.
And it looked to me, or it was either just the way it was discussed or the way it was positioned, it looked like an agile development tool. And I thought it was a project management thing for software projects. And so I kind of poked around with it a little bit and then just bailed on it. But the fact that people are now using it more as task management or to-do list management is actually intriguing to me, because aside from pen and paper, I have never found a better way to manage my ongoing to-do lists. And I've tried pretty much everything. I mean, I've tried GTD and Excel spreadsheets, and I have a lot of stuff in Fogbugs, but that doesn't work that great for me either. So if you actually get in and start using it, I may take a crack at it.
One of the things that you can do in it is like you can take a Fogbugs URL and paste it into a card, and then it will put like the little Kiwi logo as a little button on top of that card. And you can take the cards and you can drag them around, so you can essentially reorder things. So you know how if you're looking at a project within Fogbugs, like if everything has the same priority, you can't really organize them within that priority, for example. But you could do that here.
Yeah, you can in Fogbugs, but it's not easy.
It's kind of kludgy.
You have to add another column that's called, and it's called like burn down or order of, it's for agile development. And I just added that in the last couple of years. It wasn't there for years. And then you add numbers. Yeah, it's not a visual way to do it at all. So that's a nice touch then.
Yep.
I forgot to give something away at MicroConf. I emailed you this week and I was like, why did I just get this email from Amazon that I'm getting a copy of Diablo 3? Like I didn't order this. I haven't played video games in years. And we were just going to give away the, you know, obviously there was no box or anything because Diablo 3 just came out yesterday. So we're going to give it away in spirit and then send it to someone later. We forgot to do that. So we're going to run a contest on the podcast here. I should have this box in my hand, I think today, actually. So we are seeking topic suggestions for future podcasts, topics that we haven't already covered. And the 15th topic, we're going to randomly choose that number. The 15th topic suggestion we get is going to get this copy of Diablo 3, assuming you actually want it.
Sounds good.
Where can they send those questions? At startupsfortherestofus.com. Hey, did you meet Glenn Germain at MicroConf?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, so he had emailed in. He runs mypractice.net.au, but he asked pretty detailed questions. You know what? He did email in, and it was a long email that basically outlined our entire episode on outsourcing to developers. So you know, I recorded that episode and he took that information, that advice, and he actually went and put it into play. And so he flies in from New Zealand to Vegas for MicroConf, which was just awesome. I'm sure it's like 25 hours of time. And then he introduced himself to me and he told me the whole story of like how he had used our advice and how it had worked out pretty well for him. And so I was going to talk about it today anyways, but then I noticed it looks like you already have him in the list. Like he wrote us an email and kind of summarized his outsourcing experience.
Yeah, he did. I'll paraphrase a lot of what he said. Basically looked at everything that we laid out in episode 64. And then first step that he went through was he placed a job on Odesk for a .NET developer. And since it was his first hire, he decided to keep tight reins on the entire process. So he created the ad as private instead of doing it publicly. So only the people who he wanted to invite would be able to apply. And he sent invitations to about 20 candidates and then received 12 applications out of those. And I think that I talked about it before. The last time I went through this process for a .NET developer, I got something like 80 or 90 applications in the first 24 hours. I had considered making it private and just inviting people, but then I decided to just go ahead and make it public just based on, you know, what people's availability might be. But what he did was he went and he limited the search for the people who were in the Eastern Asia region because he wanted somebody who's close to his time zone, because obviously he lives in New Zealand. And he also limited the search to people who rated themselves a 4 or 5 in English proficiency, because he wanted somebody who had really good communication skills. And then he set up a Google Calendar with a range of times over the course of about a week and invited all 12 of the applicants to do a Skype interview. And of those 12 people, two of them didn't have microphones, so he just kind of ruled them out. And then in going through this process, what he found was that the rating for the English proficiency was basically pointless, because until he actually talked to somebody, you know, looking at their emails is one thing, but talking to them is a completely different story. So he spent about 10 or 20 minutes doing each of the Skype interviews, and it wasn't really a technical interview he was doing. He was just trying to get a feel for them and their ability to communicate, and he judged their technical ability based on some of the previous projects they did. And he said that only took him 3 or 4 minutes on Skype to be able to rule out a lot of the applicants and identify those who really stood out. And at the end, he had two of them who stood out, and he offered a job to his first choice, and that first choice took the job. And then he just set up a time and said, look, we'll try this out for 4 weeks and then we'll kind of review how things are going. And so far, he said he's been really pleased with the quality of work, and everything else has been a complete success. And, you know, the rate that they agreed on was $12 an hour.
And that's awesome, right? It's like, what a cool success story that he actually took all of this and put into play. Because when he wrote, he had tons of concerns about the process, understandably so. It's not super simple, and he handled it really well. But he also had concerns because his app is complex. He can't afford to hire someone full-time to work on it, and he was concerned that it would take him as much time to explain a task as it would for him to do it. But he basically said, nope, all that's behind him, and everything's working out great. So, awesome. Nice job, Glenn. I'm really, and you know what? It makes me feel really good, because it's like we invest time and effort into doing this podcast, and it's like no one's actually, I know people are listening to it, but if no one's actually implementing it, then there really isn't a huge point. So to hear success stories like this is really encouraging.
Yeah, definitely.
I've been spending the past, it's been about a week and a half. It's pretty much since I got back from MicroConf, making Hittail support Chinese characters. I had a bunch of cancellations, or a handful of cancellations, several months ago when I relaunched it, and people were canceling because it wouldn't support like even basic Eastern Europe, Western Europe, like umlauts and, you know, pretty simple Unicode stuff. And so I got that dialed in fairly quickly, but to get support Chinese characters and Chinese search engines is a lot of work. Let me just say, it's way more work than I thought it would be. It's basically trial and error, and, you know, 12 hours into something, I finally figured it out. And I also figured out that, like, JavaScript and VBScript, classic ASP, they cannot handle certain types of encodings. They just are completely not built to support it, whereas .NET can, with one line of code, can basically translate between every encoding anyone is using in these search engines. So I actually had to resort to some crazy hackage, and I have classic ASP calling .NET at one point.
Are you serious?
Really? Through COM interop. Yeah.
Oh.
I know, it's brutal. It's not actually that complicated to do, but it was just a last resort because, you know, there's that barrier. There's going to be a performance hit on it. I tried to do AJAX and just have JavaScript call into an ASPX page, but there was cross-domain issues there because there's security implications. So all that to say, I genuinely was like, Chinese characters, all I need to do is get an NVARCHAR, you know, Unicode column in my database, and I'm all set. And that was completely wrong. So it took me about two 12-hour days So almost 24 hours of work, and then there's still some little, like little bugs, maybe 1 out of 10, 1 out of 15 are coming through, which is weird encoding. So luckily I'm able to knock those out now. But such a monumental effort, dude, not only just to support all the characters, but to like deal with, you know, search engine query strings, and feels good to almost be done.
That's kind of crazy. I can't imagine, you know, having to support Chinese characters. I mean, it's do you get a lot of requests to your site from Chinese websites?
Well, that's the thing is, I mean, I would not have spent the time on this if I hadn't. I actually had a couple people cancel because it wouldn't support it. And then I have a site on deck who's basically going to be, you know, if he comes on board, they're probably my first quote unquote enterprise customer. They just have a huge website. It's a consumer web facing website, but it's in China, and it gets, let's just say, it gets millions of hits per month. And since my pricing is tiered based on the number of visits you get, it's, you know, several thousand dollars in monthly revenue if I'm able to get him on board. Wow. So that was almost exclusively the reason I spent so much time getting this done. And now we'll see if he actually, you know, comes through and gives it a shot and everything. But I had originally hoped, oh, I'm going to bang this out in 4 hours and then, you know, get him using it. But obviously it took longer than that. So hopefully it still comes through.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Earlier I started using Trello a little bit. And one of the other things that I did to kind of reorganize some of the things that I've been doing is I created virtual users in Fogbugs. Have you ever done that?
I haven't. Are they users that you don't get charged for?
Yes. You basically, you create these virtual users and they don't have a login. They can't actually get in. It's typically used for assigning cases to like a group or to this queue that is unassigned that hasn't been kind of taken by anybody yet. And people can just kind of pop them off and start working on them as they get time or whatever. What I did was I actually took a bunch of cases that were in there and created virtual accounts for several of the different things that I'm working on and took all the things that were assigned to me and assigned them off to these virtual users. And the idea being that once I get to the point where I've hired somebody to actually perform these tasks, then I'll just basically take them and reassign them to that user instead of to this virtual user.
Yeah, that's a nice way to do it, just to get things off your plate and kind of clear it up. Now, is one of your tasks that you've added to your task list to hire someone to do these
tasks?
Yeah,
it was 3 or 4 different virtual users that I added. And in exchange for adding those 3 or 4 new cases to my queue, I got to offload like 250 things.
Yeah, that's nice. Are they development tasks? Or are they more VA, like admin stuff? Or is it a mix and you actually need to create an admin user and a development user? And
no, most of it's development tasks, to be honest.
Got it.
I've been considering adding an account for the VA that I use, but I don't know. I have reservations about paying an extra $25 or $30 a month for a VA to use Fogbugs if they're not doing like support tasks, you know?
Right. If it's just simple one-off stuff, you can email them anyways. It might. You know,
right. Yeah.
I think this is a really good exercise that if someone is using any type of project management software, if they start assigning stuff to a non-existent person, and it's like future VA. That's actually a pretty good exercise to see what you think you could outsource. I have to do this about every 30 to 60 days. I have a calendar reminder that pops up and it says, go through your task list and take off everything that you don't want to do, you've been procrastinating on, that's been on there longer than a few weeks, and try to assign that to someone. And so it's an exercise I go through because I always fall back into the trap of wanting to do everything myself. This is an intriguing way to do it. And if you're managing your to-dos with Fogbugs anyways, it certainly would work.
Yeah, well, I think the problem that I ran into was just that there were so many cases assigned to me that I'm looking at them trying to figure out, okay, well, what should I be working on next? And there's just this massive pile of things that need to get done. And it's almost back to that mountain of stuff that you've got no idea where to start. And I just looked at the number of cases assigned to myself, and I was just like, this is way too much. I've got to figure out some way to whittle this down to things that are the important things that I need to be working on versus the things that I could presumably either outsource or have somebody else do. And it actually gave me a much better perspective on the things that I'm able to outsource. So in doing this, I created these other virtual users, and it gives me this basis to be able to say, yes, I have enough work to be able to keep somebody busy doing these things for the next 3 weeks or 3 months or whatever.
I set up a Hittail affiliate program, and it's through Ambassador, getambassador.com. And I wanted to find out what your thoughts are on the percentage, a fair percentage of recurring revenue. So Hittail, you know, it's like $10 a month or $20 a month for kind of the bottom two plans, and it goes up from there based on traffic. But I've seen, you know, you see web hosts where they give the big payment up front. It's the $50 or $100 bounty to sign up. But I'd almost prefer to do, you know, just a percentage of the recurring revenue, because I think it's a nice thing to be able to offer to people. Most affiliate programs don't do that. So I'm bouncing around. I feel like 15% is probably as low as it can go and still be reasonable, you know, still make people want to promote it at all. And I feel like going over 30% is probably tough. It's, you know, just tougher for the margin, right, to give that off the top to someone. So I'm thinking I'm going to start at around 25% and move it based on feedback I get. And
I don't know. To me, you know, 30% seems low, but at the same time, it is recurring revenue. So it's not really just 30%, and that lifetime value could theoretically be fairly high.
Right. So, that's the thing. When you're selling an ebook, you know, it's typically between 30 and 50% that you'd see on commission. But this is obviously, you know, a much higher lifetime value. But I don't know if everyone will understand that or not. I feel like giving away 40 or 50% of top line revenue is a tough sell for me to do it.
That seems, yeah, I think 40 or 50% seems high for a SaaS app, you know, on that recurring model. You know, I would think that 20 or 25% would be reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what I think. I think AWeber and a lot of like MailChimp and those are in that range as well. So, you know, the lucky thing is that since I'm small, I can still make adjustments pretty quickly. Obviously, grandfathering people in who get sales, but it's like if it seems like it's too much or too little, it's easy enough to make adjustments. So I think I'm going to start at 25. Now, this is mostly, I mean, so ambassadors mostly, they're trying to give affiliate marketing a good name is essentially what they're doing. And it's mostly for like your customers to market your app. It's actually a pretty cool idea. And so if you go to getambassador.com, I know the guy who owns it, but I really like the tool. And the thing is it makes it feel not like someone schlepping your product, but like they're genuinely excited about it. Although I do have a public facing, there's, you know, if you go to hittail.com, there's an affiliates link in the very bottom footer. But more than that, I'm going to be promoting it inside the, you know, once you've signed up and you've actually become a paying customer, it's those people who really do have a good testimonial to give. And so Ambassador allows me to just kind of pop something up to those folks that says, hey, you know, here's your link is you're already signed up because you're a customer. And if you click this Facebook link, then, you know, it'll just post it on your wall. If you click this Twitter thing, it'll post it to your Twitter feed or whatever. So that if people do want to promote it, they don't really have to, it's not like they're true affiliate marketers where they have this big list. They really just want to kind of talk about it to their friends. And that's more of the goal that Ambassador facilitates. So,
right.
But it also serves as a public facing affiliate program too. So it's an interesting experiment. I haven't had good luck in the past with affiliate programs, like with .NET Invoice. And there was one other product that I tried it on, and it was kind of meh, you know, just the results were so, and it was more work than it was worth.
Yeah, I think there's definitely good potential for this as opposed to some other things that maybe get lower traffic or that you don't necessarily have people involved a lot more with the product.
Yeah, like it's too tight of a niche. Other products, if you're really tightly niched, it almost, I question if it works as well as something like this where a lot more people could use it.
Like, for example, one thing that I think would not work well is something like QuickBooks. You know, it's a downloadable application and everyone uses it, but it's not like anybody is really invested in the success of the product. I mean, nobody cares. You know, it's into it. You know, who cares about how they do?
Right, right.
You'll definitely have to let us know how that goes.
Yeah, I will. It's already all implemented. It's just a matter of fitting it into my marketing queue because I want to, you know, let customers know about it and kind of do a little campaign around it. So should be here in the next month or so.
Cool.
Do you have an Audit Shark update?
So one of the things that I did at MicroConf was I walked around and I had these little business cards that I had created that I printed out. You know, they just basically had a space for a name and email address. And it just said, yes, I would pay X dollars a month for that. And one of the things that I've been looking at over the past couple of months was whether I'm really going in the direction that I want to go with Audit Shark. And to give you a better idea of what I was looking at was I was actually considering going after funding for it. And, you know, I talked to different people, you know, whether the idea was fundable or not, was told that basically, you know, it is a fundable idea. I knew people who could introduce me to the right people, but it wasn't something I really wanted to do. And I was trying to figure out whether or not going in the direction of banks was even, you know, something that was going to be ultimately viable and more for my goals than anything else. I mean, I know that I could get to them and talk to them, but it would almost require that I have money. And it's just, it's gotten to the point over the past six months or so that I don't really want to go in that direction anymore. And part of it came about because of looking at, talking to some of the different banks and getting some of their feedback and, you know, figuring out who it is that they deal with. So what I've been trying to figure out is, you know, what do I want to do with Audit Shark? I've got this great utility that can go out and gather information. Is there a way that I could essentially turn it into a SaaS model where I'm going after, I guess, smaller dollar sizes versus a smaller number of customers, but with larger dollar amounts? Because, you know, the examples I've used in the past where if you have, you know, 80 or 50 or 100 machines, then it's $5 a month per machine. And, you know, you look at that and you're talking a $400, $500 price tag, which almost requires that you go talk to these people in person. So what I've been looking at is, well, okay, cool. How can I turn this around a little bit and maybe charge $25 a month for a single machine and go after a much larger audience? You know, because obviously Hittail is kind of in the same ballpark in terms of pricing. I mean, you charge anywhere from
$10, $9.95 and goes up. Into the hundreds.
Okay. So I was looking at doing possibly the same sort of thing. And I'm like, well, how can I kind of twist this around? And I went and talked to some people at MicroComp. And I actually got commitments from people to pay me $350 a month for it. Total.
Not each.
So, but basically the idea would be that, you know, they were concerned about the security of the web servers. You know, are things configured correctly? Are there ways that people could get in? Are there vulnerabilities on my web server? And AD had actually talked about getting hacked at MicroConf. I mean, that was one of the, I wouldn't say it was the whole theme of his talk, but, you know, it seriously affected his business. I mean, and getting hacked like that can completely put you out of business. And the people I talked to were kind of worried about that. And one of them had actually said, oh, when I heard you were taking Audit Shark to banks, I was a little disappointed because it sounded like it was something that I could use. So just in discussing it with them, you know, I got three different people to basically put down, yes, I would be willing to pay for that if you came out with it and, you know, aimed it at me as a target customer. And so I'm looking at possibly shifting things over and going after the market of people who have web servers that they want to make sure are locked down.
Okay, cool. So you're talking about doing a pivot then. You're talking about taking the same code base. You obviously need to make some changes, but it's not like some complete rewrite.
Right.
And doing a market, essentially market pivot, you're solving a different problem, right? A related problem, but it's a different problem for a different market. How many people combined into that 350? Is that three people or four people?
It was three.
Okay. So are you going to... Yeah, so I guess the next step in my head would be to talk to more people, right? It's like three people is great, but are you going to talk to more people? And how do you find those people? Because when you're at a conference, that's awesome. But, you know, you're only going to be at a conference once or twice a year. But, you know, kind of what's the marketing channel that you would look at finding more of these people?
What I've done in the past was, and I was looking for something a while back when I was trying to figure out where I wanted to go with this. One of the questions I'd asked on my blog was about WordPress security, because I was considering at that point going and, you know, auditing machines specifically for WordPress vulnerabilities or examining the files and stuff that were on those machines for permissions errors and things like that. And I got a fairly reasonable response from just my blog. So I think that's probably the first thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to put it out on my blog and say, hey, is this something that you'd be interested in? And just go to wufoo.com and just create a very quick little survey and just post it there and see what kind of response I get from people and see if there's genuine interest there. Because what I'd really like to do is get commitments from at least 10 people before I actually decide to go in that direction.
Right. And obviously the podcast, if there are any listeners out there, I could announce it on next episode and Twitter and all that. Yeah. So that's probably a pretty good first step for getting that customer development started.
Mm-hmm.
So you want 10 commitments. Is that what you're saying?
So definitely looking for 10. Obviously, if I can get more, then that's great. It's just more of a testimonial that I'm on the right track with that idea and that it's something that people are genuinely interested in doing.
Right. How do you know that what you're describing to each of these people is what they are imagining?
One of the issues with the banks was just that, oh, well, it kind of was what they needed, but they still wanted that third party person to come in, and whereas I was looking to replace them. I think that the people that who would be reading my blog and, you know, listen to this podcast, quite frankly, are probably a bit more technical than managers at banks. You know, the other thing that I'd be looking at is the target market is probably people who don't not necessarily spend the time and effort, but they're concerned enough that they want to spend the time, but they don't want to spend the time. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Yeah, they're concerned enough that they want it done, but they don't have the time. They want to outsource that time to hopefully an app.
Right.
Is the idea, right? Or outsource it to you through the app.
Right.
That makes sense. Are these enterprise folks that you're talking to?
No.
I guess let's say that you talk to 20 people and you get 10 commitments, or however many people you talk to, you get these 10 commitments that you want. And so out of the gate, hopefully most of them come through. So you'll have a nice, you know, small chunk of recurring revenue when you launch. From there, you know, you'll want obviously a scalable marketing channel of some kind, and you have plenty of time to figure that out. But I'm wondering, if these guys aren't enterprise, kind of what is the marketing channel beyond the blog and the podcast and Twitter? Because those are going to run out pretty quick. Where you think you might be able to go from there?
I'm still kind of working that out. So, I mean, I really want to see if it's something that people are interested in. And if so, then try and figure out how to reach them.
So it's more of a build something people want. If they want it and they're willing to pay for it, then if the price point is enough, frankly, you can afford to even do some outbound stuff and more medium and I don't know, high touch sales, but yeah, at least medium to higher touch sales.
Right. I can still go to outside consulting companies who do managed services, for example, for some of their customers. And one that comes to mind is the company down in Providence, where I talked to them a little bit about Audit Shark kind of early on. And they have this established customer base where they're bringing in, I forget what it was like $6 or $8 million a year, where all they're doing is managed services for all these different companies that are in that area. And, you know, one of the things that they don't really do or do well is checking the machines for security. So like people's web servers and things like that. And they would definitely be able to leverage that into their customers. Something else that somebody had mentioned to me was, they're like, hey, if this was like an add-on from my hosting provider, and for an extra $20 or $30 a month or something like that, you could check my server to make sure that it's not configured in a manner that is, you know, terrible for security, then, you know, that almost seems like a no-brainer to me to just say, oh, yeah, I'll take this option for an extra $49.95 a month. So I think that there's a lot of different ways it could go. It's just kind of getting to the point where I have people who say, yes, this is something I'm definitely interested in, and then kind of going after it. But I want to make sure that demand is there first.
Right. So right now you have the blog and the podcast, you have your consulting work, you're still working on the forum software, Audit Shark, or anything else?
The AlteristTraining.com site.
AlteristTraining.com. Okay. Remember when Heaton Shaw?
Yes.
Remember when he said focus? Now, I'm the pot calling the kettle black here because I work on too many things.
I know. It's funny that you mentioned focus, because literally just last night I printed out in, I forget what it was, 160 or 260 point font, the word focus with an exclamation point, and I've got two of them hung up in my office right now that I can see from here.
Got it. Okay, so is Altera's training still gonna happen? Are you gonna move forward with that? Or are you gonna put it in the forum on hold while you do the Audit Shark Cust Dev?
I'm not doing much of anything for the forum software right now. And then with the Altera's training website, most of the legwork for that has been done. I have to post some videos. I have to sign up for a Wistia account. I actually had somebody go sign up for it, and they couldn't complete the process of signing up for it because I didn't have everything configured right. So I have to go back to that person and see if they're still willing to sign up. But, you know, that stuff is, I think, still going to move forward. I don't see any issues there. I mean, I think I'll spend maybe an hour or two a week building out some of the content. But other than that, I'll be able to outsource a lot of having that posted to the site and basically integrating all the content. My sole responsibility will basically be to record it and then kind of maintain the SEO progress.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's the marketing I'm more concerned about, because I know you can automate almost everything except for the screencast, but getting enough people there to make it, you know, worth your time and to kind of grow the business.
But I also have somebody who's the company I do consulting for or through, they're willing to put it out to their customers. They already have somebody lined up to pay for it as soon as it's done. So I've got a $500 sale basically sitting there waiting for me just as soon as I'm done.
Nice.
I am juggling a lot. I'm trying to figure out, you know, and that was part of the things that I've been doing over the past week to try and figure out how I'm going to get better organized and kind of get more things done with less effort.
Right. You know, I have this rule that I go back to. People say, you know, Rob, you're totally unfocused because you work on all these things at the same time. But the secret that I have is that I never build two apps at once. Like if I buy an app, I stop pretty much everything else I'm doing except for the blog and the podcast. And I work on that app. And I work on it. And then once I'm done, like once I feel like it's in a good place, I find some good people to do the development, to do the support, and, you know, sometimes the marketing, and then boom, you kind of pass it off, and then I watch it. And as fires come up, I'll have to deal with stuff. But I never try to build two businesses at once or two products at once, because I find that it's just too hard.
I'll be honest, I'm kind of in that position right now where I know that building the things that I'm building right now is going to be too difficult to manage building all of them at the same time. So I'm trying to pipeline them a little bit, where I've got Audit Shark in a position where I've got a developer who's working on some back-end utilities and code for it, and I'm doing more of the upfront customer development to make sure that when, let's say down the road in a month or so, I get to the point where I say, yeah, I want to go in this direction, and this is something I've at least proved out the concept that people are willing to pay for it, then I can switch over to working on that a little bit more and hit it more on the marketing side. But for the time being, I'm spending probably more time doing marketing for the forum software and for Altieris training, because the Altieris training stuff, I don't feel like I have to do a lot of marketing because there's such little search engine traffic for it. I think that a lot of it's going to be driven by either word of mouth or by direct sales, which that stuff is essentially being handed off for me anyway. I don't have to necessarily worry about that stuff. So I'm in this weird situation where everything is kind of at a different stage, and right now it's manageable. And my concern is that things catch up to one another.
Yeah, everything ramps up at once, and then you're like, you're in over your head before.
Yeah, that's my biggest worry right now, is that something catches up with something else.
Right. So are you planning by next week's show then, do you think you'll have done more of this customer development research for Audishark?
I will definitely have created the survey and put it out there. I don't know how many of the results I'll have by then. What I'm actually thinking of doing is not putting the survey out to my site until this episode goes live, so that when people listen to the episode, if they have some thoughts on it or if they actually want to come check out the survey and take the survey, then they can go to the survey and check it out. I'm sure that I'll just launch it straight from my blog, and I can put just a note in the show notes for this episode. That'd be pretty quick and painless to do.
Yeah, sounds good. So I know we intended to answer listener questions, but we basically have just given some updates. I think we wrap up this episode, and then maybe next week it looks like we had 4 questions queued up, and you said we have 20-something in the pipeline.
Yeah, we'll definitely do listener questions next time. If you have a question or comment, you can call it in our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. If you enjoy this podcast, you can subscribe in iTunes by searching for Startups or via RSS at startupsforthestofus.com, where you'll also find a full transcript of this episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.